Hello, it's Dave, your friendly editor type man, person, thing, whatever you want to call me. This is just a very quick thing to say. I'm very sorry this episode is late. A lot of things going on at the moment that we've had to iron out, and it seems to be working now. So hopefully regular drops on a Sunday are still going to be a thing with a bit of luck anyway. Also, just before we get going into this Q&A episode, we learnt of the sad passing of Carl Weathers, who sadly passed away at the beginning of February. We mentioned him quite a lot in this episode, but we didn't realise at the time, I think it was maybe an hour after recording, that we found out that he has sadly passed. Me and Matt just want to pass on our best wishes to his family, friends, relatives at this, you know, very, very sad time. At this moment in their lives, and that Carl Weathers was an amazing force to be reckoned with on screen. If you feel like you need more of your Carl Weathers fix, go back and listen to the Action Jackson episode, which I think is a fitting tribute to the man who was Carl Weathers. And now, with that all said and done, let's get into the Q&A 2024.
Greetings and welcome back to the Anyone for Seconds podcast. I am your host, Matt, and with me is a detective, Dave, and we'll go into the reasons why very soon. What you're listening to now is part two of part one's attempt at recording our Q&A session prior to recording our films, media and music of the year. So this is our 77th anniversary edition. So say hello, Dave, and we're going to go through our Q&A users. No, that must mean work mode. Listeners, far better than users. We're going into some Q&A from our listeners. We're going to talk about some things we experienced this year, some heartbreak we recently experienced in the last 20 minutes, and kind of just go from there.
Yeah.
So, Dave, say hello.
Hello,
Dave.
Are you
feeling happier and positive now?
I am so happy. I'm so positive. I'm not at all pissed off because the laptop just decided to delete everything that we've just recorded for the past however long.
You didn't just lose 30 minutes worth of recording at all.
Of absolute gold? No.
Last time round, we kind of said, what were the highlights of the year? To which we both actually focused on streaming.
Yes.
That's a highlight from the year. So let's just skip all of that preamble bollocks. Get straight to the good stuff, Twitch. My question to you was that we did a lot of streaming last year, more than the year prior to that. Last year being the year of Musk, 2023. What did you find to be your most enjoyable streaming experience last year? Because I know that you started the year by streaming Sonic of Sonic Mania fame, also from his debut installment of Sonic 2006, and I believe you streamed, was it Sonic Frontiers? Is that the
Sonic
most
Frontiers,
recent
yes.
Sonic games? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you started with that. You had some emotions with it. Tell me a bit about that again, and I'll pretend to sound interested, and then you can tell me what you actually enjoyed streaming the most. And then I will offer you my input as I did previously. So, come on, sound genuine. Give it a
okay,
go. Give it
right,
a go. On.
Right, I mean,
go on. Tell me your thoughts on Sonic.
Sonic Frontiers is oh, it's a fucking game, all right. It exists. It's a game. It exists. You can run around and make willies in the world. Oh, it's great. It's literally ADHD.
Good. And you even got that up on YouTube, haven't you?
I will be, yes. It's going to go on YouTube at some point, yes. It's literally ADHD, the game. That's why I had to stop playing it, because there was just so much to do every 10 seconds. Like, I'm doing this. No, you need to do this. No, you can do that. But you can do this instead. But you can do that. But why don't you do this other thing? And it's like, I can't focus on what I'm doing in the game.
Enough.
Let alone be amusing and entertaining. So it's like, I can't.
When you weren't playing Sonic's Wilson, what was your highlight of streaming of the year, Leighton?
Probably two highlights of the year. Honestly, the Nice Chill Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy streams were a lot of fun. because I know those games inside out, mostly Crash Bandicoot 1, Crash Bandicoot 3, Warped. I probably mentioned it in the Best of 2023 episode about how much I kind of dug Crash Bandicoot 2. If I don't, or if I haven't, because time, it's
just assume it's a circle. That we did.
It's a circle. Kind of
just pretend that we did.
Discovering that game for the very first time was with kind of having never experienced it on the PS1 or anything like that was quite an experience, especially, you know, after I'd been playing the first one and the third one, which I know like the back of my hand, which you've heard in like when Nostalgia Strikes episodes and such like, which we should do another one of soon, actually thinking about it.
Yes, we should.
Kind of playing that and going through that again, it's a lot of fun, and just kind of talking, and I've got a lot of great clips from that actually, which I am going to put up on YouTube at some point, so keep an eye out for that. And I think probably the other highlight as well is discovering the weird and wonderful world of Hatful Boyfriend, which is a visual novel of you're a transfer student new to a high school in Japan, but all of the students are birds except for you, and it's very, very strange.
And we agreed recently, as in the last 30 minutes, that the best way to describe it is that it's a visual novel.
Yeah.
That it's interactive, clicking on static screens as opposed to animated, and that's described as a visual novel.
Yes, yes. 100%. That's exactly it. Because it's really weird, because it kind of references real-life things in the real world. Like, it references this cafe that you go to work at as, like, a part-time job, and you're like, right, that's weird. And then kind of it comes up with pictures at the end of it, like in the real world, and you're like, what the hell is this? And then kind of I looked it up online, I think I did it during the stream as well, and I was like, huh, it's actually a real place where you can go pet real birds and stuff. I was like, that's kind of cool, but also kind of weird, but sure. And like I say, that game has got several endings anyway, so I may go through again and try and get a different ending. I seem to recall the ending I got was either the bad one or the sad ending. I guess they're kind of interchangeable.
Not the bad sad ending.
Yeah, I won't spoil it, but because
in that ending, both Jill and Chris don't escape from the mansion, and also the tyrant's not released, which is the worst possible ending. That's totally the one that happened.
That's the one I got. Yes, but with more pigeons.
Yep. Fair enough. Last time round, we somehow managed to segue nicely, but that's not happening this time. But I have a streaming request for you to experience this year.
Okay.
Being that I think a good one for you to stream, it's a Game Boy hacked ROM.
Yep.
So it's a fan game, because one of the things I talk a lot about is fan movies or fan driven things. So there is a fan game of Pokemon Fire Red. Now, Pokemon Fire Red and Pokemon Leaf Green are the Game Boy Advance remakes of the original Pokemon Blue and Pokemon Red, respectively. It's a fan mod where you play as Team Rocket, and rather than catch Pokemon, you steal Pokemon off trainers. So when you beat them in battle, you get to choose a Pokemon to steal off them. You don't catch Pokemon in the wild at all. You don't earn money by doing gyms. You earn money by beating people and stealing their money. So you recall in like Fire Red or Pokemon Blue and Red, or, you know, Leaf Green or Fire Red, etc., depending on whether you like the remakes or the originals, to which I quite like the remakes over the originals. But anyway, it sort of tells the story from your perspective as a new person joining Team Rocket, but they dovetail into the existing story of, you know, that Viridian Gym's empty, and then like Giovanni's out and around. You see there's some exposure of Team Rocket, like Silph Co., referencing the Master Ball and stuff like that. They dovetail that in to go that Team Rocket are behind all these things, and they build a narrative around it. Because do you recall when you get to Cerulean City initially, there's a house that's been burgled, and they're going, oh, maybe that was Team Rocket. In Rocket Red, you do said burglary. You know, like you've got Bill, who in Fire Red, you go, oh, you're a monster, and you put him through the converter and turn him back to a human. But what happens in this one is that you as Rocket actually push him into the machine that merges him into the Pokemon. So you're kind of the causation of some of the things you see. But the other funny thing is that as the game progresses, I keep talking about this like super powerful trainer who just turns up and destroys people, and everyone's sort of fear mongering and talking about him. And that is the protagonist character you play as in Fire Red or Pokemon Red or Leaf Green or Pokemon Blue. Like, going, does this kid turn up and ruin this? Like, just out of nowhere. It's just so powerful. I think he killed someone's Pokemon, which is why you then end up at, like, the Ghost Tower. It's got all of these cool things. And I won't spoil too much more of the story, but it all dovetails in, to which I think from a story perspective, it's great. But experiencing that first time on a stream with everyone else in the audience potentially doing that, because also when you steal the Pokemon, you get to name it as well because it's yours now. There's just little things like that, and that Team Rocket run the daycare center, and it's not a daycare center for Pokemon, it's called the Breeding Pit. I would recommend that as a mandatory if you're going to stream a Game Boy type game or a Pokemon game, go for that. But yeah, just to throw that in there as a side point, if you want to do a stream and you want to do a Pokemon game, do that.
I think that's generally something that I will keep a lookout for. Because my knowledge of Pokemon fan ROMs or fan hacks, whatever you want to call them, is generally quite limited. So yeah, that will be something that I will have to keep an eye out for sure.
Super duper. So I streamed Resident Evil 3 last year. Granted, I streamed getting to the shopping precinct multiple times. I think it was about 3 all in before I got used to streaming. Mm-hmm. Quite enjoyed that. I'd like to do that again. Maybe I'll stream some Dino Crisis or some other older PS1 era, or maybe some point and click games. I do like a point and click game. Maybe that's something I'd like to do a bit more often.
Maybe you could stream a certain point and click game once you've released a certain Late to the Party.
Yeah, I need to finish writing my words for said Late to the Party, because normally I finish the game and then it takes me 3 months to write the Late to the Party, and then another month to record the bloody thing.
Yeah.
And then it gets released. But yeah, I would very much like to stream those because it ticks multiple boxes.
Yes.
Right. Now we're going to move on to the listener, not viewer, as you said last time round. We're going to go onto the listener's question section, where you referenced queuing some A's, but I think that sounded dirty, but so I'm just going to answer some questions.
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that, and we're going to do it. It's going to be great. It's going to be the same energy, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be wonderful, and, you know, I'm going to cheer up. So it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, we'll give it a go. Well, our first question is from via the Twitter, the little blue birdie thing. I refuse to call it the alphabet letter. It's from Matt, also known as @StoneOfBilvis. I have no idea what a Bilvis is. Hopefully it's not an expletive. Who asks, what film that doesn't currently have a sequel do you want to see a sequel for? Now, last time, as with this time, unless you're going to change your answer on the fly, you sneaky hooligan, we both said within 3 seconds, well, the answer to that is really obvious. It's Dread.
Yeah.
We both would love a sequel to Dread. Now, I offered that even without a time machine, I believe we could get a sequel to Dread right now, and it could literally be following a day in the life of Dread and his colleagues, or a couple of days. It doesn't need to be anything magical. It can be lower budget, it can be gritty, even though that's cliche, but it could just be another story in the life of, in the day of, a standard day in Mega City 1. You know, it doesn't have to be super high budget, lots of things occurring, because let's face it, Mega City 1's a shithole. He could just do drug bust, he could do sort out people smuggling, he could do any number of things. Hell, maybe he's on guard duty where these ISO cubes are. Maybe we could see the ISO cubes in the prison detention systems. Kind of the core sentiment is, we could have this, it would be great, and you could do it now. That doesn't need to be set in the past, because you go, well, he's aged, to which I'll go, yeah. In the comics, Dread aged in real time as well, which was quite unique for comics. And there's over 30 years worth of stories they could pull from or merge and do some really great stories. You don't necessarily have to do a big Anderson PsyOps type thing or Psy Division. You don't have to put in like Judge Death or any of that kind of stuff. You could just do some low level street crime stuff, and it would just be great. Which I think more or less articulates what I offered previously. So now over to you.
Over to me. It's my turn to rant. So I think with the strength of Dread was that kind of the world building that went into it. Yes, it was the future, and yes, it was dystopian, but it was still kind of grounded in this natural and organic way that you just don't get with a lot of other adaptations of this nature. You know, you think back to the 90s Dread film and the look of that, although it had, obviously it had the light cycles and it had the big shoulder pads and stuff, and it was, but it didn't match, the visuals didn't match the tone of the film, if you get what I mean.
You go, they're in spandex costumes, you got flying yeah. bikes, but those aspects look really clean and the city look like a shit heap.
Yeah.
Where you're like, it kind of doesn't match. Whereas in this, the world and the cities are a shit heap. The uniforms are practical but look worn and yeah. tattered.
Yeah.
Just everything feels really organic and natural, and that, yes, it all belongs. Nothing felt out of place.
Like I say, you've got enough world building there already to kind of expand it. It's the sort of film that it doesn't have to be, you have to spend, you don't have to spend like $250 million on it for whatever fucking reason, unless your name's Warner Brothers. You know, you could spend like under $100 million, not even that. You could spend very little on it and, you know, alright, it didn't make a return at the box office, which I think is partly due to when it was dumped, and I believe as well with the post-3D conversions, you know, kind of come along
made
with
the timing
it.
Poor.
Yeah, it was really poor timing.
Because of the conversion, it released after Raid Redemption,
yeah,
which had the similar pop point, and you go, it drew comparisons to that, and both are great films, but you're like, typically first one in the market is the one that's would be compared to, and it may have made a slightly larger box office than what I discussed previously. And I'm going to keep referencing it like that, despite none of you ever being able to hear what I what I referenced previously, is this film was not a big studio production. It took funding from a lot of crowdsourcing and Chinese firms and international sort of money syndicate type things to make this relatively low budget film for the creative team, to which that's why it kind of really needed to perform and hit big numbers. And the studio's decision to go, well, 3D films make more money, going, yeah, but your target audience of this, of action movies, of violent films, of sci-fi, none of us give a flying fuck about 3D. That was a mistake, and that really hindered it to go. Like, say, if this was a Universal or Warner Brothers film, well, hell, you look at Warner Brothers, you go, oh, that film made no money, that's okay, make a sequel. Oh, that film made no money, that's okay, make a sequel. Because the studio logic is, your first film never makes that much money, but you recoup money on sequels. And even then, say, like, if you look at the recent run of DC films, like the last three or four films on a trot made no money, to which they're now going Universe reboot. But potentially, if Dread had come out, say, from Warner Brothers or Universal, they could have made two or three really good films, even if they made no money, because they're able to sustain it based on all the money laundering and backdoor things they do that way. But because this was independent, it needed to make the money at box office, at tickets. And as you told me on home media, which I said to you, I actually purchased this on Blu-ray, which is something I never did for films. I'd be like, that's a good film, enjoyed that. Wouldn't necessarily buy it on home media, but that one, yeah, I bought that on Blu-ray, absolutely.
Because the thing now in the age of streaming is that it doesn't necessarily, because it goes straight onto a streaming service, you're not going to get the returns from it like you did, say, when it came out on Blu-ray and media, where obviously the studios and whatever get a cut of whatever sold and what like, and obviously that's where a lot of the cult fandom come into it. And obviously, as you've just said, you bought it on Blu-ray because you were like, yeah, this film's fucking great, it needs a sequel. Like, I remember going out to the day it released to Tesco's and buying it on DVD, and then later on, further down the line, like when I got a Blu-ray player, buying it again on Blu-ray because I really, really like this film and I'm really passionate about it. You know, it's kind of gutting that they put in all this work to this universe building and casting. Fucking Carl Urban as fucking Dredd is amazing casting.
He has a great chin.
He has a great chin, but it's kind of been squandered. So much so that they even tried to get like a mini series off the ground, which just didn't happen, which I think was going to be called Mega City 1 or something like that. And Carl Urban was like, yeah, we want to do it. We want to do it. We just got to find the financing and the funding. And they just couldn't do it because obviously the main projected thing is this is the box office return that we had. Obviously couldn't justify the series, and so much so now that literally, as in like a day or two ago, they've announced like, yeah, we're doing more 2000 AD films, but they're not doing another Dredd. They're doing like a Road Trooper, which I think sounds fucking amazing because it's Duncan Moon, who's directed like Moon and the Warcraft movie, and I believe we said as well Son of Bowie.
That's what I offered to it. But what I was saying to you is I could see it working in the style of Deadpool, because Rogue Trooper, his hat talks to him, his gun talks to him, and his rucksack equipment talks to him. So I could see that working in the style of, like, say, the Deadpool movie, where he has an inner monologue external. I could see a character talking to inanimate objects, be it a voice in his head, or if they added a little animation thing to the equipment and it working in that visceral world of like wars and violence, because we are tired of a sanitized Marvel PG world. We want violence from our superhero films. I think that'd be the best way to do a palate cleanse, is to go, yeah, you're used to all that Marvel stuff, here's some violence. As you said to me, what is Amazon doing at the moment?
Well, yeah, exactly. It, like, you think how successful like The Boys has been for Amazon. 3 series, I think they're shooting a 4th series at the moment. It's got a spin-off in Gen Z or Gen V, whatever it's called, and you know, people are absolutely loving it and lapping it up. Even like, to a lesser extent, like the Harley Quinn cartoon series, that's getting the 4th, 5th series right now, and that's more arguably adult because it's dealing with more adult content in that series as opposed to like your standard animated fare. I think we've reached a point now where kids grew up...
Violence is the way.
The thing is, right, is that kids grew up when they were younger, like when they were... When Iron Man came out in 2008, they were like young. They'd have been like, you know, 9, 10 or whatever. And as they've got older now, they're obviously like into the late teenagers and then kind of like the, you know, in the mid-20s and stuff, and they've kind of got bored of it and seeing it and seeing something different, and Dredd would have been the thing, because as well, there's so much potential there. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, Matt, but there was a fan film a couple of years ago called Judge Minty.
Yes, because we wanted... Did we talk about fan films on a fan edit episode?
I think we wanted to, but we never did.
Because I definitely went and watched it.
With that... It's a very, very low budget thing, but the world is so... It's so easy to translate, and it's so different. It's got a distinct visual style to it. Like I say, to kind of set it all up and then just, like, go, I didn't make money. It's like, fuck you. You know, you've got a good thing there. You don't have to do, like you said, Matt, you don't have to do all the Judge Death shit and all this stuff. You could literally do... Boots to the ground, street level, thugs and, you know, taking down the crime gangs and the syndicates and the muties and whatever they're called in 2000 AD Judge Dredd books. But you could do that and it would have been different. And I think that's the key thing here, is like, it would have been different. To not do it is kind of mind-boggling, to be brutally honest with you. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I want to know how much money they need to do it. And like, they did... crowdfunding and money from other sources last time. How much do they need in order to do it?
Yeah.
If I put aside a couple quid every week, how close could we get to that?
Can we do that? Can we make that happen?
Could we just ask like some rich people to go, do you like movies?
No.
Or like it's things like that where you go, how much do these when you talk like say big Twitch streamers, I can't think of anyone, what's he called, like Asmongold or whatever he is, like he has tens of thousands or millions of viewers or whatever. You probably make enough money a year where you could fund 3 or 4 films. Could you do us a solid and just fund this, you know, and then just do an extra stream to recoup your losses kind of thing? You know, it's things like that. Or you could go to all like the footballers and that and go, look, would all of you just give 1 week out of your 52 weeks worth of salary so we can have a cool film made? You'd probably get away with just one football team doing that and that'd be enough to fund the film. You just come on now.
I think that's what will cause like world peace, in a similar way that Bill and Ted, they write the song that causes the world to unite and everything. I think Dread 2 could probably do it.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Don't see what other options we have.
It's Dread 2 or nothing.
Yeah, it's just Dread 2.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Moving on, question 2.
Question 2. Go on then, ask me question 2.
Right, question 2 is from Fender the podcast, Bernie Leo. Hi, Leo, I hope you're doing well. His question is, how can I legally, in quotation marks, throttle Nick Kroll? So for context for you, Matt, because I know you're going to be lacking a lot of context here. Friend of the podcast, Leo.
Context is appreciated.
Yeah. He came on and he watched the wonderful comedy masterpiece with me known as The History of the World Part 2, which is the sequel to Mel Brooks's film from the, I want to say, early 80s, called History of the World. And Nick Kroll of Big Mouth fame basically wrote half of the sketches and he appeared in it as various characters, and generally it was just fucking awful and he's got a punchable face. So what do you think about that, Matt?
I think that's a good amount of context. I kind of get the vibe here. So then we really need to break this down as to really get into like, can or how can I legally throttle Nick Kroll? Well, you know, a lot of it, if we're talking about an American legal system, it's also the premeditation of the crime to go. If it was a spontaneous off the cuff thing, you should be able to argue it, but if it's premeditated, you'd less likely be able to get away with it. As for making it legal, well, that's legislation. So if you're in America, you've got to get that through the House of Congress. I think that'd be quite straightforward, a bit of standard lobbying to people, go, look, we just want to throttle Nick Kroll. They'd go, actually, I'm on board with that. Let's get that into legislation to push that through with a Bill of Rights. Same kind of logic if you're saying more UK-based, where, you know, we'd write to Rishi Sunak and the PM, ministers, say, hey, look, this is a burning issue. We really need you guys to come to a consensus. They'll take it to the back benches. It'll go back and forth. And I think, again, consensus-wise, they're all going to go, yeah, you know what? I think it would do as good as a nation to all just line up and throttle him one at a time. So I'm pretty sure they'd enshrine that into UK law in a quite timely manner. I don't think there'd be too much of an issue there. And then all you really need to worry about, really, is your travel accommodation to get to the location where Nick Kroll is at any given time, you know? You know, do you want to go like budget flights like Ryanair or EasyJet, or do you want to pay a bit more for like a business class premium thing? You know, are you going to stay in like hotels, motels, or do you want to do something fancy like a five seasons to make sure you're in your right kind of mindset? Then obviously we need to talk about prep time to go. You want to throttle him, but you need to make sure that you've got sufficient arm strength, and you know that you don't want to take that opportunity and then not be able to throttle to the sufficient degree. So we need to get into like your exercise routine to make sure you're doing a lot of arm work, a lot of grip strength work. So like I'd say farmer walks where you carry heavy things for long distances, or suitcase walks to really build up that grip strength, so when you're throttling him you can really see kind of the life like panic in his eyes, which is really the driving factor of what you want. So I'm hoping that, you know, this is a twofold thing of making sure that you're physically capable for it, but also making sure that legally you've got the support of either the US government or the UK government or whatever region you're in to make sure it's all fully above board. Otherwise, I'd say if you're talking about the legality of it, you know, it's always that thing, chances are they may want to counter sue, to which I'd go, what you need to do is make sure that James Spader and William Shatner are available to defend you in court, because as we know, based on them being actors, they can actually defend you in court based on doing 5 seasons of Boston Legal. So even then, worst case, if you go to a court case, it'd go to a judge who would be, call it outrageous and preposterous, and then William Shatner will just go, Denny Crane. And then Alan Shaw will give a long, impassioned speech to which he'll go, we all should be able to throttle Nick Kroll. And it's perfectly acceptable to do it. And the jury will go, wow, brilliant speech. And you'll all get the all clear. And then you just need to worry about your travel arrangements back to home. And I'd also say, as much as it would be tempting to record it or have video evidence of you doing it, maybe wait until you've been cleared via a court case that's been enshrined into law. You don't want to go and video something like that prior to getting the appropriate permissions, you know, because that could be viewed as premeditation. So I'm hoping this helps answer your question to a sufficient degree. I can hear Dave laughing, but I don't know why, because this is quite a serious topic and thing that you've brought to our attention. So hopefully I've done your question justice, Leo.
Well, I mean, I don't really know where to go from that. I guess question 3. How's that sound?
Question 3.
Question 3.
Because I nailed question 2.
I believe you did, sir. I really do believe you did. So question 3 comes from @Scatterkeer on Twitter. Because, you know, if Elon Musk can deadname his children, we can deadname that fucking social media website. Scatterkeer, by the way, does an amazing radio show on Noisebox Radio, 8 p.m. UK time, every Monday, and the pitch for the show is he scans the globe for an hour of great music you've almost certainly never heard of. So it's like literally a global music show from like countries all over the world, and his lovely witticisms and such like as well. It's a very good show. It's worth listening to. And he says, what is Biggest Leaf?
Now, my answer to that is, that's such an easy question, like ask us a harder one. It's clearly Pokemon Leaf Green. It sold 12 million copies worldwide. That is the Biggest Leaf. Also, it's got Ivysaur on the box art, who has a big leaf on its back. I think I've ticked that box twice there. That's a double tick. Move on. Next question.
I mean, I was going to say like a palm leaf or something, but I mean, I think you've pretty much nailed it on the head there.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't see what else could be, could potentially be worth covering.
You know, I think like a banana leaf or something, you know, like from the tropics or somewhere like that.
Why would someone ask about that? Well, clearly they wanted to talk about Pokemon.
I mean, sure, okay, we're pretty Pokemon heavy tonight, but that's fine, we'll allow it. Last question.
Okay.
And this is all new, brand new content. We've not been here before. Yeah. So whoa, oh, prepare for greatness.
Whoa. Yeah,
right. This comes from another friend of the podcast, Mr. Roxmore.
Whoa, I can't handle the newness. Whoa.
Shut up. Friend of the podcast, Roxmore, asks, which film, whatever year, would you have most liked to have seen at its premiere? So I'm going to go to Matt first, because I need time to think.
Well, I wanted to break this down into 2 sub-questions, because I needed some clarity on this. Is it that I'm seeing it at the premiere as in its first screen? So, for example, I could go back to 1984 and watch the original Terminator to get a big screen experience for that. Because, for example, I've seen re-releases of Predator, re-releases of Terminator 2, The Blues Brothers, all sorts of films at the cinema, thereby I've had the cinema experience. Or, when we talk about seeing the film at its premiere, are we talking about being able to be on the red carpet with the stars of the movie? So hypothetically, I could have been on the red carpet for the premiere of Predator with Arnie, with Jesse Ventura, you know, with that entire cast, and actually rub shoulders with them, or say the cast of the Expendables, been on the red carpet with everyone there and been able to meet with them and then going and watch it and see not only those people that starred in the movie film, but also the famous people by proxy that attend these events. So can I clarify, to your understanding, which of those two scenarios I'm required to answer?
I'm going to say both, because I think that's more interesting. Because I think you at a red carpet with the cast of Predator would just be hilarious. You running up to Schwarzenegger and going, son of a bitch, and then getting a bicep out.
The thing is, right, I'd be quoting, because in this scenario I'm a time traveller, I'd be quoting to them the film that's not been broadcast to anyone, and everyone on the red carpet other than the actor is going to be like, the fuck's wrong with him? And the actor's going to be like, how does he know the lines of dialogue from the film and why that particular line? That's a nothing part of the film. Whereas 20, 30 years down the line, everyone would have been like, that's amazing. So that's the thing. In terms of films I really like that I would like to see on the big screen that I haven't currently seen on the big screen, I think most films I now have seen on the big screen where they've done classic screenings.
Mm.
I think potentially the only one I've maybe not seen on a big screen I would still like to is, I don't think, unless I have and I've forgotten doing so, I don't think I've seen Big Trouble in Little China on the big screen.
Oh, that would be
don't
good.
Don't think they've done a classic screening of that as best as I can remember.
I don't feel like anywhere around here has done a Carpenter season. For sure.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, they've done The Thing.
Yeah, because I've seen The Thing at the cinema. Great film. I've seen Escape from New York on the big screen.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
Fucking
they did
hell.
A screening at the one that used to be Warner Brothers.
Oh, The View. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
For Escape from New York. And I went probably in. It must have been before the pandemic, because face masks weren't a thing. And I went with someone that had never seen it. So to experience on this big screen was great. But then also chatting, it was a chat called Tom I saw it with, who'd never seen it, to actually see that for the first time on the big screen and go, you know what, for an old film, that was amazing.
Mm.
You know, it was that. So yeah, no, I've seen a few Carpenter films on the big screen now. Big Trouble in Little China to stand out to me is a film I love, one I would love to see on the big screen. I would be there for that. But then I know, based on the ability of hindsight of that the premiere for that, because it came out at the same time as The Golden Child, I don't think the premiere of that would have been one to see on the red carpet because of all of the politics around it. And I genuinely think to be at a premiere, you want to be there for the actors, the associated famous people and the vibe, also to see a kick-ass film, but maybe be there for a film that everyone knows is going to be as good as well, so there's a big buzz for it. Because like, you could go, oh, I'm going to go watch, say, go to the premiere of, yeah, I'll use a Carpenter example again, go, I'm going to go to the premiere of Halloween, see all the actors twitch. That was a sleeper hit or a surprise hit. There was no buzz around it. Twitch, you go to the red carpet, meet the actors, go, oh, this is good. Watch the film, go, that was bloody good. But you wouldn't get that experience. Well, you almost want to go to one where there's a big buzz around it. So I am gearing towards like an Arnie film, like Terminator 2, to go, everyone knew when that was coming out, shit, that looks good, that's going to be a big film, fuck, Arnie's at the height of his powers here, James Cameron, everybody, I think that would probably be the one to have been there for in person.
Terminator 2 is an interesting one as well, because of all of the advertising around it as well, because at the time,
can you imagine the reaction in that cinema? And because it's a premiere, it would have been full of Americans and they overreact to everything.
Yeah.
So that would have been an amazing environment to be in.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah, that would have been spectacular.
That one really stands out to me. Like, as much as I love the Predator film, I don't think there was that much hype around it prior to its release. You know, I don't know much about movies, but I think, like, what I would call, for me, in terms of action films, the films I most like to watch at cinema, in terms of hype around something or being at a premiere, I'm thinking it's got to be that either that heyday in the 90s where everybody was just amped up to a ridiculous degree because of what had occurred in the 80s, or the only example maybe I could think of from this millennium, like maybe Marvel Avengers Infinity War, like the big premiere for that.
Yeah, which was going to be one of my picks, actually.
Yeah, that one, to be like, that was a fucking good film, had a lot of hype around it, and just the way that starts with like Loki being killed off, and then the way the film ends, whereas the buzz around the red carpet, all of the famous people in it, all of those people that meet and mix with them, let alone them bringing all their famous friends with them, that would have been one hell of a red carpet kind of environment to be at.
Even again, going back to kind of like the advertising, the social media around it as well, the social media advertising after that film came out, I don't know if you were still on social media at the time, Matt, but a lot of things I saw about it was from like official accounts, and it was just everybody was like, don't spoil the ending, don't spoil the ending.
Yeah,
like the official Marvel account was going, don't spoil the ending. And I think it's probably the only film in the last, maybe since then, actually, to be fair, where people have stuck to it because they've gone, don't spoil the ending. And which is absolute madness when you think you can go online now and there were stills out of like the ending of the Marvels and shit. But I remember going online,
yeah,
and being like, I could not find anything online about the fucking Infinity War ending because people were taking it so seriously, like, because of this marketing drive, and obviously because they're telling people you need to see it, you need to go out and see it. And then, you know, I imagine opening night for that would have been absolutely mad. I know I saw it a couple of weeks, I think, after it released, and I was with you, and even I had the big reaction to it.
You saw it really late, where I was like, shit, is this even still going to be on the cinema, when I eventually dragged you away from Essex to go see it. And your reaction in the cinema firstly embarrassed me, but secondly I'm like, I'm glad that no one had spoiled that for you. I think the moment for me which I remember in terms of you reacting was, what, that's the Red Skull, oh fuck, it's the Red Skull. I think was more or less your kind of reaction, like, what, it's the Red Skull. Yeah. And I'm like, we ain't got to nothing yet, buddy.
Yeah, I remember so vividly when that ending happened, and everyone, I was like, they're gonna have to do it, they're gonna do the thing. And when it happened, I think I just really quite loudly shouted out, no fucking way. They did the thing.
And then you were like, you got to the end of the film and you're like, where's the rest of it? They can't have ended it like that. Where's the mid credit scene? And yeah, it's like, no, there is nothing else here. This is
absolutely nothing.
This is it. The only other film I could think of where, and this is going to be a left wheel thing, is that, you know, I wouldn't want to go see an Oscar film or anything pretentious like that, but maybe one of the other films I would have wanted to see, again, if I'm in the time traveler mindset, right, is maybe Hercules from New York. Now, it's a bad film, but it was Arnie's first theatrical film, and what he did is he went to every screening in his local cinema duplex thing, and every person that come out of the cinema on the way in, he went, hi, my name's Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm in this film, did you like this film? I would have loved to have been there for that, just to go, yes, and I'm going to be following your career, can I be your friend, please? Like, can I, via time traveling, cool, get myself like tangentially in your life? Also that mentality of going, wait, this is a film premiere and you're here watching people go into it, because it was like a low budget limited screening thing, and going to multiple screens to say, hi, my name's Arnold, I was in this film, what did you think of it, kind of thing. I'm like, you wouldn't hear that nowadays. So I think it also, I want to go to a big one for that experience, so like T2 or like Infinity War, or, you know, in terms of that red carpet, but in terms of like a more peculiar one, something like that would be really cool, to go, oh yeah, I'm the director of the film, or I'm the writer of the film, or whatever. I go, okay, let's go for a drink. I now wish to interrogate you about this film and the filmmaking process and your thoughts behind it, kind of scenario. You know, so I think I'm ticking all the boxes here and giving them like a grade A answer, by the way.
you are. I'm very impressed. I mean,
yeah. See, despite being in my sleep deprived state, I mean, knackered, I took the question and I applied extra context and subtlety to it that you just weren't prepared for.
I'm just trying to think back. I think as close as you'd get to seeing Big Trouble in Little China on the big screen is if they did a live score with the screen projecting. I've been very fortunate enough to see the European cut of Dawn of the Dead scored by Claudio Simonetti's Goblin, which, by the way, there's like 10 different fucking versions of Goblin. We're not going into it. And seeing that on the big screen projected, but also with a live band there playing as well, playing the music. And it was in the Union Chapel in London. It was like Halloween as well, so it's all adding to the atmosphere. And it was an amazing experience. But I think as close as you'll get, like I say now, is if something like that happens. And, you know, John Carpenter, let's be honest with ourselves here, he spends most of his time getting stoned and playing video games, which is absolutely fine. I'm fucking here for it. But the other thing he does as well is he goes out and he plays shows and stuff, you know. It's been a couple of years now since he's played the UK, but I think that's probably as close as you're going to get. I mean, I've been closely eyeing, they're doing a Batman 89 showing soon, I think in London again, but they're doing a live scoring of that as well. I can imagine that being a hell of an experience with the Danny Elfman score. But
would Danny be present?
No, I don't think he is, but having that...
Because again, I've seen Batman 89 on the big screen, I'm like, yes.
Which we have seen.
Live score. Yeah, sold.
Yeah.
You can tell it's a good store if they still use it in the modern films, because they can't get anyone to write anything better.
Except if you're Michael Giacchino and it's the Batman. That's so fucking good. I love that score. I love that score so much for the Batman. God damn it. I think for me...
Yeah, but I can't hum it.
Yes, you can.
Go on then.
Dun, 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 dun. That's all you need.
But that's all there is.
Or you sing the Nirvana song that's kind of riffing on it.
Yeah.
Something in my ass. Ooh. That's not how it goes, but you know, I've seen the memes. I know the memes.
It's to go back to the topic we're drifting from.
I think you've got some solid choices there.
I think I was trying to think of, is there like a drama or a different film that's not an action film that I'd want to go to a premiere to which I'm like, nothing else leaps to mind.
In terms of red carpet thing, I think recently, I can't remember if it was Oppenheimer or I can't remember if it was Barbie. One of those.
If I'll go to Oppenheimer, it would just be to go up to old matey boy to go, look, can someone else just rewrite your scripts a bit, please, Mr. Nolan? And also step away from that fucking foghorn just to have a word with him to go, it's probably a great film, but come on now.
But the thing is with that, is I can't remember which film it was. They were at the premiere and they were advertising, they had all the directors there, they had all of the actors there. The strike was announced.
Yeah.
And at that exact time, every single actor walked off the red carpet all at the same time and said, we're striking now. And I can't remember if it was Barbie or if it was Oppenheimer, but to see that in person would have been...
That would have been nice.
It would have been history. Because, you know, that strike went on to be one of the longest strikes in, you know, Hollywood motion picture history and such, like, you know, one of the longest actor strikes and stuff. In solidarity, obviously, with the WGA and such like. But to see that would have just been like, wow, that's so cool. It's kind of depressing that they've got to, but also it's kind of like, it's like history, you know? And like,
yeah,
when you go back, like, thinking historically to like red carpet events, even going to something like maybe seeing something like Enter the Dragon you know, which came out after Bruce Lee's death, and just, you know, having the, all right, you're not going to have Bruce Lee there, but to see everyone there basically celebrating his life and his work, I think would just be so emotional and such an experience. And seeing that film on the big screen as well, with an audience of, you know, people effectively grieving and mourning as well, you know, kind of seeing the potential that Bruce would have had, you know, if he'd properly stamped and survived, you know, to make an even bigger mark on the world than what he did, I think would be, you know, it would be kind of amazing and mesmerizing. And even going back even further than that, the original Godzilla from 1954, you know, going back and seeing that with an audience at the time would be so like amazing, you know, everyone marveling at all of kind of the effects. And obviously they've just come out of the Second World War.
Again,
and obviously
great score as well,
yeah, with the great iconic score blasting through, and obviously all these visuals and seeing it with that audience, you know, I've literally got shivers down my spine kind of thinking about it, because the only thing kind of comparable is like watching Godzilla Minus One, which I'm sure I talked about in the previous episode, where kind of watching it for the first time, you're like, wow, holy shit, this is so fucking primal, you know. And it's kind of you know what I mean, but it's seeing it with an audience through their eyes, who's like lived through the atrocities of like World War II and obviously like Hiroshima, and you know, they're living through that, but to see it with that audience, for them to go fucking hell, it's like seeing it there on the big screen would just be like, you know, it would be absolutely amazing and such an experience. Kind of anything like that, you know. I was quite fortunate enough last year, which I'm sure I've probably talked about in the episode previously, I had the experience of seeing The Ring, the original Japanese Ring from, I can't remember if it's 98 or 99, but I had the experience of seeing that.
Yeah, it was
that.
Definitely one of those.
Yeah, I had the experience of seeing that on the big screen last year for the first time, and I'd never seen it. But seeing it in that audience, even though we knew the twists and turns that were coming, and the visceral reaction to people to that horrific ending images and how that film ends, is it was just amazing. And seeing that when it premiered at the time with people who would have never seen this kind of thing before, because it's basically now a trope, right? You watch the video and 7 days later you die because you get the phone call, and la 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 la, you know, we've seen it in fucking Scary Movie, whichever one it is, you know, and it's been parodied so much. But to see it kind of for the first time with fresh eyes, I think that would be amazing. So different and so fresh for the time as well. I think that would have been like so cool to experience. And I think in terms of red carpet, it would have to be something like really modern, you know. Or part of me just wants to go back and see like The Evil Dead, to see Sam Raimi at the start of his career, and go to him, do you know, 15-20 years time, you are going to direct some of the biggest films in fucking Hollywood and make all of the fucking money, you know, as this kid who started
out. Steer clear of Spider-Man 3, but yeah.
and
make sure you have that holiday.
And yeah, he does need a holiday. And fucking yeah. The Oz prequel as well, Oz the Great and Powerful. But to see you know, to see him kind of go from this little indie filmmaker to, you know, like him going on to direct these bigger and better things, Bruce Campbell as well, so young, and be like, yeah, Bruce, you fucking cool, dude. You are gonna fucking own the shit. You know what I mean? It's like, you are gonna make a mark on cinema that you just haven't, you know, these young guys who literally went out into the woods with like a 16mm camera to make the proof of concept, to then go on and make The Evil Dead off of the proof of concept film. To go from that, to see them kind of this really small, tight-knit team, to, you know, like literally go on and do bigger and better things, so much so, you know, we've just had probably one of my films of 2023, you know, Evil Dead Rise, come out, and it's still reinventing the genre, so to speak, you know, and rubbing shoulders with everyone there, like, even like Ted Raimi probably would have been there and stuff, you know. I mean, just like, yeah, you guys did fucking good on this film, and you're going to go on to do like so many bigger and better things. I feel like I've just basically talked for like 10-15 minutes, but
You have, but I thought I'd let you go because you're sounding quite happy. So I thought I'd let you roll with that. The only other option I could think of potentially is I'd want to go to one of these things that is a catastrophic failure, or like an actor's last good film before it all goes wrong, just to stop them and go, you're about to be offered this role in this film, do not take it, it will destroy your career. I'd want to properly take Butterfly Effect and just like reshape history to go, no, just don't.
Eddie Murphy, you know that script for The Adventures of Pluto Nash you've just got on your desk? Don't do it.
How? Arguably for him, I'd say don't even do Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, wow. Like,
try and course correct as early as possible kind of thing. It's things like that where I'd just be like, no, come on now. We're almost drifting into the kind of a time travel and parallel world episode. But no, in terms of a red carpet, I'd like to have been at the premiere via point of time travel from where I am now. I think Terminator 2 for me would have been a good one. If not the Predator, more recently maybe Infinity War, or maybe Expendables 1 or Expendables 2. Just for a good thing to rub shoulders with those kind of people would be quite good an experience. I genuinely can't think of any films I'd want to see that don't fall into the action genre at red carpet, because if it's an Oscar film I'd be like, nah, don't give a shit, it's all pretentious bollocks, fuck off, not interested. Oh, the only other one I think, yeah, which we kind of referenced but didn't, Batman 1989, to go, Jack, you fucking legend. Michael, yes, Mr. Elfman, my lord. But then also to have a quiet word with Tim Burton to go, look, at a certain point you're going to want to do things with your career. Don't go down that path. You know, you're going to want to work with your mate Johnny quite a bit. Resist that urge. Just pull back a little bit. Don't go so far down that thing to go, you made some good films together, but at least five of them were not good.
The only other film I can think of,
yes,
is a fucking controversial pick.
Is it Paul Blart Mall Cop?
Oh, no, but although also yes. No, it would be to go back, and again, very much for the same reasons like I listed for like Godzilla and stuff like that. It would probably be go back and see one of my favourite all-time films of all time, which is a fucking statement. I'm going to say it. Yes. Fuck it. I'm going to say it. Go see Cannibal Holocaust. Hear me out.
Did it actually get a premiere?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It did in its native Italy.
Oh, so you'd be going to Italy. I was going to say, I thought it was banned and didn't even get theatrical releases. But no, if it did actually have a premiere somewhere in the world.
It had a premiere.
Then yeah.
Because I believe, I can't remember if it was at the premiere or sometime after, the director, Ruggero Deodato, he actually got arrested because basically, for those of you who haven't seen the film, I'll try not to go too graphic.
Please don't.
This explorer basically goes out to find out what happens to missing documentary camera crew, and then this person, he finds the camera of the documentarians, and it's from like it's like a found footage. It's one of the very first found footage films. But what he did was that the people, the documentarians who were in this found footage, he had them sign a clause in the contract to say that they wouldn't turn up for interviews or press or act in another film for the next year.
Assume that they had actually died and keep up that.
So he got arrested and then he had to go to court to basically prove that he hadn't basically
killed
them. Yeah, that they weren't dead. He hadn't committed murder. And like, there's, again, I'm not going
to get... I've summoned them to court, but part of my contract means they can't turn up.
But like, there's like bits of the court case that you can read online, like how they got the effects team to come in to basically reenact some of the more, again, I'm not going to go too graphic, some of the more graphic scenes.
So it's not
that
you want to go to the premiere, you just wanted to go to the court case and sit on the aisle of the court case.
Well, no, the thing is as well, is seeing that on the big screen, I think it would be
traumatic.
It would be an experience, because that is a film.
Yeah, because I guess a lot of the crowd wouldn't know what it was, and you'd probably get people walking out, passing out, vomiting and stuff like that. Yeah, no, that doesn't sound like something I'd want to go to.
No, but you think that the world didn't really properly get into the found footage film until the late 90s with, like, the Blair Witch Project, which is actually probably not a bad shout, to be fair, either. But to have that as like one of the very first kind of genre defining things that they did, and to see the audience reaction, because I know what it's going to be, because it's a film that, I'll be brutally honest, I don't watch often, if I watch it at all. It's a film that I'll listen to the soundtrack more of than I'll watch, just purely because the film is so fucking graphic. To see that and see the audience reaction, you know, it's like a sadism in me. I'm kind of like, I want to be there to see, like, they're like, oh my god, is this real, is this not, basically live that, you know, much like people did with the Blair Witch Project, because when that came out, a lot of that was, is this real, you know, and they set up the whole, we could do a whole episode about viral marketing, but they did the whole thing with the websites, and like, have you seen these teenagers, and there was like websites set up, and there was phone numbers you could ring and stuff, and it was like, it was a whole thing at the time. But yeah, I think that'd be another interesting one. Or conversely, on the other hand, like, no, I've got nothing. I've got nothing. I can only think of horrible films. I was trying to think of a kid film, and I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing.
What, live action or animated?
Like some form of animated film or something. I legitimately can't think of one. Like, I was going to say Shrunk, but I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Nah, maybe you'd want to go to, like, big one that revived Disney, which was that Lion King that brought Disney back from the brink of death.
Yeah,
that might have been
much
a good one to be at the premiere about.
Before they went down again.
Or maybe Tarzan, to go, Phil, mate, that drumming. You didn't have to go so hard on the soundtrack. Like,
like the meme.
Yeah, exactly like the meme. I'd do the meme to him in person before everyone else, and I'd be deemed a comic genius.
Or would you go back and tell Phil Tippett that there were raptors in the goddamn kitchen?
Yeah, goddamn it, Phil, you had one job.
Raptors in the kitchen, Phil. Goddamn it. Raptors in the kitchen.
You know what, actually? Jurassic Park would probably be another good one to have been at the premiere for. Steven Spielberg, height of his powers. That year he directed, what, three different films, didn't he? I think that's the same year he had
Schindler's List as well, didn't he? There was another one. It might have been 1942 or something. Can't remember.
Yeah, he definitely did three in that year, and you're like, wait, how the fuck did you do that? And he just goes, I'm Steven Spielberg.
I have money.
All right, mate. Yeah, calm down.
No, it was only the two. It was Jurassic Park and Schindler's List.
Oh, okay, but two great big old films.
And then 2 years previously before that, Hook. And then a couple of years after that, Lost World, Jurassic Park, and Shaving Ryan's Privates, and so on and so forth. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He again, to see his film there is like he was just knocking out winners, and to be at the red carpet for that would have been great. And again, I don't know for that one whether they had people dressed up as dinosaurs. I'm not sure what they did in addition to the red carpet, but again, that would have been pretty cool.
I would hope so. I would hope they have dinosaurs. If not, I'd kind of want him to walk about with a little model dinosaur, much like the director of Godzilla Minus One is doing at the moment, because obviously it's nominated for loads of awards. He's walking about with a toy Godzilla. So there's just all these pictures online of him meeting Martin Scorsese and Harrison Ford and Robert De Niro and Cillian Murphy. He's there shaking hands with them, and it's just a little Godzilla toy. Because he's literally like, it's my boy. I'm so proud of my boy. So cute.
Yeah, I would have hoped they would have had dinosaurs there or people dressed up. Mind you, they probably didn't have the fancy dinosaur costumes we have now, you know. I don't mean the inflatable ones.
I was going to say,
the ones that look realistic. No. I mean, the ones that look realistic, take one of them back with you as well. You could shit a lot of people up as well. It'd be quite funny. I kind of can't think of any more example, which is fine because I nailed it on my first one.
You did. You really, really did. I was going to say we should probably get round to wrapping up, to be fair.
Yeah, do the wrap-up.
Let's do a wrap-up.
Wrap it. Wrap it
2023, yeah. It's over. Welcome to 2024. I know we're a month late. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Fine because everyone else does it at the same time, so we thought we'd wait till afterwards. So then you have all that extra attention on us.
Yeah, that's the excuse that we're sticking to. All right.
Well, there's no excuse. It was planned. Flawless execution.
Thank you very much, everybody, for getting in contact, sending us all your cues that we aid so fucking well. We just fucking nailed it. First time, no problems. Just fucking nailed it.
Yeah, this 45-minute recording has not been going on for 2 hours.
No. Totally not.
You specifically, I only wanted it to last 45 minutes.
Sorry, my apologies. The laptop just decided to go, nope.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Anyway.
Thank you all.
No problem.
Thank you all very much for listening. Why don't you follow us on social media? We're on Facebook. Just search for us, you'll find us. We're on fucking Twitter. It's a dying platform, but we're on there. Or, I'll tell you what you can do. Do you know what's not a dying format? A dying social media.
What you could do is fund Dread 2.
You could do that, but also you could go find us on Letterboxd. That's a new social media. We're on Letterboxd. Yeah. If you like me rambling about films and shit, oh, you'll love it on there because I ramble about films all the fucking time. Search for A4S Podcast on there. We are on there. At time of recording, the most recent reviews are Looney Tunes Back in Action and Over the Hedge, because I watched them while very drunk the other day and I had a fucking great time.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Just in case you're curious, Looney Tunes Back in Action, 4 out of 5, and Over the Hedge, 3 out of 5.
I wasn't, but okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I've been updating that a lot recently for So go find us on there, that's A4S Podcast. Arguably one of the best ways to get in contact with us at the moment, aside from Letterboxd and all that other stuff, is via emails. That's anyoneforseconds@gmail.com. We talked about Twitch streams earlier. We are on Twitch. More Twitch streams are incoming. We're over there, twitch.tv/81podcast. Leave us a like, rating, review on your podcast platform. Our choice helps us grow the podcast and we can infect more ears and stuff, you know, the white stuff,
yeah,
in the middle of an Oreo. No, I've got nothing.
No, I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with that advert, to be fair.
Well, that's going to be today's clip because you're not familiar with it. It's Weird Al, so you'll enjoy it.
Is it?
Yeah, it's Weird Al.
I missed that then.
Yeah, it's Weird Al.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the white stuff in the middle of an Oreo. Because it's the right stuff. Get it? I'm sure it's Weird Al. If it's not, Editing Dave will tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll leave you with that. I hope you've enjoyed it. Should be a regular episode next week, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, with all that in mind, thanks again. Stay safe. You got this. Say bye, Matt.
Bye. Stuff. The white stuff. The first one was a sweet one, second one was a blast. Soon I finished off the bag, ate them up real fast. You can see them in my teeth, pet it when I talk. Had so many in my pancreas, just went into shock. I love the white stuff, baby. In the middle